Hello and welcome to the AV Forums podcast for Monday the 21st of May. And joining me on this edition are Steve Withers.
You know that wasn't me.
Mark Hodgkinson.
This is a rebellion, isn't it?
And Ed Selly.
There's a problem on the horizon. There's no horizon.
I think your line, Mark, isn't in the film.
It is.
No, it's not in the film.
It's not in the film. It's in the trailer.
It's in the trailer.
Actually, we could do
oh, well,
quotes for this.
So.
We could do quotes that are not in the film for this film really easily, couldn't we?
Oh, yeah, you're right. It says from trailer in brackets.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, I like your thinking.
I think everybody's got it anyway out there. Right, so we start on a sad note. Lois Lane is no longer with us. Margaret Kidder. I had to ask Steve who Margaret Kidder was. Was it? Because I didn't know her name, but as soon as he said Lois Lane, I knew I had a picture of her straight in my head, straight away from the Christopher Reeve Superman film.
Yes, but Superman and Lois are gone now, sadly.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously her career had suffered somewhat in the last few years because she had gone slightly bonkers. I don't think she ever really recovered from Superman IV, The Quest for Peace, but I don't think anyone did. And she wasn't that old, 69. That's not that old just to be passing on, so sad.
Being mad takes it out of you.
It does. It does. I think, wasn't she a few decade ago or so? She was running around in the middle of the night naked or something in the street. I think it wasn't good.
Yeah. So, R.I.P. Margaret Kidder.
Actually, also on a sort of semi-related note to films, Tom Wolfe died as well, and of course he wrote The Right Stuff, which is one of my favourite films, and Bonfire of the Vanities, which is a terrible film. But if you read the book The Devil's Candy about the making of it, absolutely cracking read, really really funny. So highly recommended.
And he had 40 white suits. I mean, that's to be
said. The dapper dresser, let's be honest about this.
Yes. So, I mean, well, another person of a like we're unlikely to see again. So, yeah, that's a sad one.
Okay, so let's move on swiftly and let's find out what the team's been up to in the past week. Well, Ed wasn't around last week because he was in Munich, and we're going to talk about the Munich show in the next segment of the podcast. But, Ed, it was nice to see you turn up at my Mustang event. I'm saying it's my Mustang event because I organised the whole thing. Of course I did.
Yes,
but naturally. You know what?
I made it out of the house. It was all very exciting. I mean, I took the boy with me to this historic racing event, and he was initially very keen, but when he realised that the cars don't habitually like flip over and blow up like they do in the film,
he realised it wasn't Mad Max.
his interest began to wane a bit, which is sad. But I managed to get a couple of races in, provided basically he was eating these revolting blue ice lollies, and as long as he was given one of those on a semi-regular basis, he was happy enough. But no, there was some interesting stuff there. I had a coveting moment. There was the very first touring car ever driven by German touring car legend Klaus Ludwig. There was his 1978 Mark II Escort, and that was quite Moorish. I loved the way that when I was talking to the person that was setting it up, the bloke who was driving it that day, it was only his second time out in the car, so they turned it down, their words. And that meant that it was only running a 9,000 RPM red line as opposed to 11, which it will actually go to, like Spinal Tap. So yeah, that was all good. And there was also, I don't know if Phil saw it, there was a Volvo 240 touring car, and every time it was on throttle and going up the hill, it was very Mad Max in so much as there were these gigantic jets of flame coming out the side of it. And I later read, do you know the reason for that, Phil?
Go on.
They weren't, in the touring car regs of the time, they weren't allowed to water cool the turbocharger. So Volvo decided to use another fluid that they had to hand in the car, which was petrol. So it's
as you do.
Petrol onto a red hot turbocharger, and the process of it sort of exploding and evaporating just about cools the turbocharger down and means that big bastard flames come out the side of the car.
Yeah,
but yes, your car looks very smart. I hope Will didn't leave any permanent damage to it. And
Ed wasn't allowed to sit in it. Will was, but Ed wasn't.
No. I suspect Ed wouldn't fit in it.
Oh, that's been a bit cheeky. I think. But, remember,
I
Steve,
think you'll find it's designed
it's
an for Americans.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's designed for Americans.
I forgot it's an American car. Of course, Ed would fit in it. In fact, actually, Phil, now I think about it, you look quite small in it.
Thanks, mate.
Well, you should be glad. I just said you look small in it. I mean, you're thinner.
Checks in the post.
But no, it was good. There was it was a pleasant enough day out, and then the next day I moved into my new digs. So busy weekend.
Yep, and obviously we had great weather that weekend, and. I don't want to jinx it, but we've had great weather this week as well, so well, hopefully it's looking good for the weekend. Hodge, what have you been up to?
Barbecues, birthday parties, ferrying kids around, just usual shit.
Fair enough. Have you actually been doing any work?
This week, yeah, I'm always working. You know,
always drop.
Not much for AV forums, but yeah, I'm always doing something. Yeah, I've been working, just living normal life. Nothing exotic, but you know, ticking along quite nicely.
Okay, good stuff. And Steve, what have you been up to?
I was trying to set up a very high-end AV processor and amp. I'm reviewing the processor, but the amp was sent along because I needed the additional amplification.
Don't reveal that you can't do it.
It only uses XLR outputs on the processor, so I need to get hold of an 8-channel amp that had XLR inputs, which was fine, except that the amp, and it's a French company, they'd forgotten to put in a power cord, and it turned out the power cord is the 15-amp version, the big one, not the normal 3-pin kettle lead, so couldn't do that. And also, I need another 4-channels amplification, so I was going to use the Arcam P429 for the overhead channels. And that's only got RCA inputs. So Tom Garrett had provided some XLR to RCA cables. And unfortunately, he got the wrong connections. They were male instead of female RCAs, so they didn't work either. So that was a bit of an aborted attempt yesterday. Looks nice, though.
That's the main thing.
Yeah, there you go, Ed. That's your new approach for the hi-fi reviews. It looks nice.
Actually, to be fair, I do a routine piece for a print magazine called Beautiful Systems, where basically I can just spout forth on whether it's big and shiny and the knobs feel good. So I'm way ahead of you on that.
It definitely wins in that category, and it comes with the most impressive set of microphone I've ever seen.
So it's got nice knob feel.
It's got excellent knob feel.
Don't underestimate knob feel. I'm sorry, it's important.
And as I say, the microphone is a work of art. Impressive.
Yeah, but does it work? That's
I don't know.
Yeah, good stuff. Who'd want our lives? I haven't done a Fat Club update for a while. So, in fact, I don't think I've ever done one since we initially discussed it. So I'm now 16 weeks into it, and if anybody's interested, I've lost 1 stone 4 pounds,
which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is.
You know. And, you know, the photos of the food that you're posting would suggest that it is actually food and you've not moved to the Marjorie Dawes dust plan.
Yeah, so
culinary skills are definitely improved, I think.
Yes.
Photography skills of photographing food are very good, too.
I like the way you slice your spring onions on an angle.
Yeah, you noticed that, Mark.
Oh, yeah, nice touch.
That egg and chicken salad looked very nice.
Oh, it was.
Although it didn't look lovely. Terribly salad-y, in fairness.
No, mostly egg and chicken.
Poultry genocide.
Well, it was a deep dish bowl, and there was spinach at the bottom pushing everything up, and then there was a leaf salad, then there was the chicken, and then the eggs on top. So it kind of hid it in the
layered
photograph.
Approach,
yeah, it was a bit of a layered approach, but plenty of greens in there. I always toss.
Can I just say that cooking on an electric hob blows so many goats?
Yeah, well,
it really does.
I'm used to it. I've had 15 years of it, Ed. So
it's only like half an hour to get hot.
No. It's not some. Actually, this is better. This is a new hob and oven. Actually, the oven's very good, but the hob. It's more the case that actually it gets up to temperature pretty quickly, but then actually shedding temperature so you can go on to a simmer or like a gentle you can't affect.
You have to have two rings on, don't you?
Yeah, it's basically built up a residual level of heat that will work until the universe dies of entropy.
Yeah,
and yeah, it's not, it lacks delicate touch, but you know. And also, can I just also say that having an electricity meter that you pay for on a key next to your next to your electric hob, so every time you turn it on, a big red light starts flashing, going, "You're using a lot of electricity." It's like, "Well, tell me something I don't know."
Got to eat.
It's that's depressing. Yeah, I won't lie, but not for too long, so we'll be all right.
Good stuff. Okay, so we need to move this juggernaut of a podcast on, but before we do that, we got some competitions, and Hodge, you tell us about them.
Okie doke. We have got a copy of Downsizing on Blu-ray, and that one closes on the 28th of May. We've also got potentially the star prize. There's two joint star prizes. This is the Arcam AVR390 AV receiver, and that one closes on the 30th of May. Also closing on the 30th of May is a REL Acoustics T/5i subwoofer, and that's it.
Some cracking prizes, aren't
they? Very, very good set of prizes.
Winners.
Winners.
Sorry, we're all winners, Steve.
We're all winners here.
Isn't this podcast, you know.
We've got Genetic Mutation, who wants to be Suicide Squad, but also sounds like they could be in it. And Hell to Pay on Blu-ray was won by Ben 16V, or 16 volts, perhaps?
No.
Sorry, yeah, hang on a minute. Oh, yeah, Hell to... that's the... Okay, start again. Genetic Mutation won Suicide Squad Hell to Pay on Blu-ray, and Ben 16V won Pitch Perfect 3 on Blu-ray.
Well done, them.
Congratulations.
Okay, so congratulations to the competition winners. Moving on, Hardware News is next. So let's start with some German sausage, shall we, Ed? Did you have much when you were out at Munich?
Not a huge amount, no. And I also swerved the cow's udders escalope that we found on the menu of the restaurant that we wound into on the first night. So I was a bit timid on my Bavarian, although obviously I ate lots of pork and obviously I ate lots of dumplings. So I was also on a completely anti-fat club news. The German McDonald's, or at least the one in Munich Airport, one of the standard menu items was two Big Macs, large fries, and a bucket of soft drink. What a thing! I have to say, after an entire day at the show where I hadn't eaten since breakfast that morning, I was at that like a tramp with a bag of chips. So yeah, culinary wise, Munich didn't. If you are accepting the fact that it's going to be very Bavarian, Munich didn't disappoint in culinary terms. In hardware terms, I am a little bit more mixed, because whilst there was some very interesting new product breaking cover at the show this year, you will note from my show report that the quantity of new AV equipment at Munich, which over the last couple of years had actually crept up to being a meaningful constituent part, had gone back down again to pretty much nothing. And there's still an awful lot of equipment at that show where, choosing my words as nicely as possible, it does look like it's been built by some bloke for himself. And it's always a man. I'm not, you know, I don't wish to exclude women from this conversation, but they generally have more sense than this. And if they then sell more than one of them, that's a bonus. And really, that isn't how, you know, real industries work. You should be trying to produce them as a sort of mass producible, or at least routinely producible item. So a lot of the rooms on the top floor, I literally stuck my head in, went, yes, it's another gigantic pair of loudspeakers being run at kitten's breath volume, and just left again. But there was some good stuff. I would say that some of the things that impressed me the most, in terms of just outright performance, the new PMC Fact Fenestria, all right, it ought to be pretty impressive because they're £45,000 a pair. But in the great scheme of Munich, where you lose all understanding of value, £45,000 was actually not amongst the more expensive loudspeakers there. And the engineering that's gone into them and the performance that they demonstrated, yeah, that's going to be a very special pair of loudspeakers if you've got the space for them. The new equipment from Cord Electronics, you know, nothing modest for Cord Electronics. They've developed a completely new amplifier topology, of which I've been trying to read a little bit more about, and I still don't fully understand, I'm afraid, but I'll try and get there in time for possibly having a look at it. So a whole new power amp design from them, obviously a new digital product in the form of the heavily revised Hugo TT2. I thoroughly enjoyed the new Focal Utopias. 180,000 euros. Can we be clear about this? This is an absurd sum of money. I cannot possibly turn round to you and say that they're worth it, because I'm looking. That's, you know, that most of the way to a house. However, as an engineering achievement, they are phenomenal things. So yeah. Very, very impressive. There's a new integrated amplifier from a company in Yorkshire called Sugden, and that happens roughly as often as Halley's Comet visits this corner of the solar system. So that was quite exciting, and I'm really looking forward to getting my hands on that. And otherwise, it was just a sort of monument to chrome shininess and the fact that the top 1% of society is utterly immune to recessions.
I just think 180 grand, unless you can live in those speakers as well.
Mate, they weren't. That's not the far from the most expensive thing there. I mean, there were two systems that nudged £1 million. Actually, no, two of them exceeded £1 million, and one was arguably £1 million.
Why?
Well, because that's what they cost.
Yeah, yeah, but why?
What do they do, though? I mean, they still presumably, they play music?
Yes.
Look, from records, or...?
It's, yeah, well, the most expensive one there, $1.3 million, was able to do vinyl and CDs. It included £28,800 worth of equipment supports, which I thought was quite a nice touch, and also came with £30,000 worth of batteries to power it.
Okay. So my copy of Raw Power by Iggy Pop, then, that's going to sound fantastic on it.
Joking aside, at the show, they really weren't taking... When you've got loudspeakers that cost £750,000, you're not going to take any risks and alienating the clientele that might buy them. I have spent some time in a room on my own with those speakers, and I've played music that I enjoy, and they are otherworldly. But no, they're £750,000. There's no, you cannot reconcile that as any part of logic.
Where does diminishing returns stop this?
Yeah. Oh god, it stops way before that.
It better come with a fluffer or something like that, because it's okay, that kind of dough for a pair of speakers.
It's just one of those things. I mean, in terms of more sanely priced items, there weren't that many of them. I mean, there was some interesting stuff on the ground floor. The new Cambridge Audio equipment, their Edge line of equipment. Did you go to the launch of that, Steve?
No.
Right. Well, it was late last year. I mean, they're taking their time actually getting them out the door. It's the most expensive stuff that Cambridge Audio has ever made. But by the standards of Munich, sort of prices starting at $2,500 is, you know, neither here nor there. That's some of the cleverest and most forward-looking equipment I've seen in some time. And things like that, things like what Chord are up to, and IAG, you know, the people behind Audio Lab and so on and so forth. There's lots of stuff being done at sensible prices, but Munich... I have to say, this year didn't have quite the same egalitarian touch that it's shown in some years before. It's still very much worth going, and there was interesting stuff there, but a lot of it was extraordinarily expensive. Oh, and reel to reel has gone bananas. I mean, for people for whom vinyl is just too cheap and too practical, reel to reel is now basically up and running again, and with prices running at about £100 to £150 an album, it's just as
how long before wax cylinders make a comeback.
you there is a company actually that's reproducing the playback styline stuff for people to access them, but that's more of an archiving thing. The thing about reel to reel, putting my measurement hat on for a moment, reel to reel used correctly within the manufacturer's parameters is the equal of, and in some specific regards superior to, any high resolution digital format currently running. It has fewer actual performance limitations than vinyl. It's just incredibly expensive. So there is, in an absolute sense, there's method to the madness, but no, it is also madness. And that is what it is. In terms of other news, I think this is now public. I checked this morning. Musical Fidelity, long-standing British hi-fi organisation, has been sold to Project, Lock, Stock and Barrel. Basically, I believe the UK office is now closed. The website's still up, and that's going to be part of the Project empire. It's unclear at the moment whether the brand will continue in its own right, although I'm assuming it probably will, because that's at least half the value of it. But yes, that's now part of the Project group. And the other thing I suppose that was interesting to watch was that when it comes to software controlled products, so network streamers, multi-room, etc., you can see this year, much more so than the last couple of years, a number of people who were persevering with their own systems have stepped back and given up, and it's now they're using DTS Play or BlueOS or something that they can buy into and then just attach to their own hardware. The costs of developing decent high quality, stable streaming software have reached the point now where there's some specialists left in the field, and if you're not one of those specialists, you're buying in somebody else's, because you're very unlikely to make a system that's good enough. It's the first time that we've seen something like that happen in two channel that I think we've seen for a number of occasions in a number of years now in AV, with AV receivers, where there's a much smaller number of participants and an even smaller number of people producing the boards, the chipsets, and the rest of it. Unless you've got deep pockets, lots of time, and a willingness to get it right before you make any money, now your best bet is to just buy things in. That was it. I mean, if you've got any specific questions, feel free to get in touch with me via the show report thread or whatever. I took 2 gigs worth of photos. I did try and take video, but that was a total failure from start to finish, really, because it would appear that the simple act of exposing a lens and turning it on will alert the largest German man in your vicinity to come and stand straight in front of it.
You don't have to tell us about that, Ed. We know all about it.
Yeah, not all about it. I used to hit people with a tripod just to get past, because we got so sick of being bumped and barged and all the rest of it. It was getting silly, really. So yeah, yes. No, exactly what it's like, and it's the same at CES as well.
Well, at least CES is trade only. I mean, I'd say once the public were on the
floor. Yeah, it is different when it's the public.
Hell.
Yeah, I know. Right, so that's the Munich show. Like Ed said, if you've got any questions for them, you can ask them in the show thread with the show report, which is still on the homepage. Before we go into reviews this week, I just want to update you on the electric OLED TV that we reviewed last week, and I wholeheartedly withdraw every comment I made about the TV. There's been some developments during the week which turned out to mean that this product is a lot better than we first assessed it as, because it should have had an over-the-air update as soon as I turned the TV on, which I was unaware of, and it didn't happen. So the TV I reviewed was the TV that I reviewed. However, on giving the feedback back to Electric, their engineer did ask, did it do an over-the-air update when you switched it on? No, it didn't. And here in an area that I would never have gone and looked at for an update was an update. And once it was updated, and it did take a while, it took an hour or so to fully update and restart and all the rest of it.
Bloody hell.
It's completely changed the TV. So this update, if you buy this TV, you really need to make sure it either does the over-the-air update, or you go and find the update and set it away, because it makes a big difference. So I've had to reassess the TV this week. It will be re-reviewed, re-measured, and so on, because it has improved. The main issue was gamma tracking. It wasn't tracking correctly, using it out of the box as it was. Everything was bleached and washed out, and there was no detail in faces and all the rest of it, and it looked like a 10-year-old LCD TV. It was such a bad picture, but I have to say it's now astonishingly good. And when you consider it's £849, it's going to make for an interesting review. So that will be coming soon. But like I say, I've had to rip up the
rewrite the whole thing
and redo the whole thing. So it's going to take a little bit of time, because I've also
you are electric, Phil.
Our friends.
They are a Chinese company who are handled by Appliances Direct in the UK. Right. So this was a retail sample that was sent out. It was actually one that you would buy from Appliances Direct. It was all boxed and packaged as it would be. It was a brand new TV. And like I say, it didn't do the over-the-air update. That I wasn't aware that it would have done anyway, so I reviewed it as it was out of the box and so on. But this update was there, it's hidden away. So if you do buy one of these TVs, hunt out the update in the folder and update the TV, because it absolutely changes it. And it's nice to see the company listening to feedback as well, because I gave them a lot of feedback on what I'd initially found. And they're working on that and hopefully going to implement some of the changes. It's one of the points that they did make. They said, look, we're open to user feedback, and if users come up with interesting features that we can do without adding costs and all the rest of it, they will add it. So nice to see that. So that review will be coming up, but it'll be a little bit later than initially planned, because I'm having to redo the whole thing. But yeah, really interesting. So let's move on. We don't have any TVs to review this week, but Steve's been looking at a soundbar from Samsung.
Indeed, the HWN650. So this year's soundbars start with an N. Last year it was an M or MS, depending on which one you bought. It's an interesting soundbar, actually. It's design-wise, it's very similar looking to last year's models. It's got the same excellent level of build quality. It's basically a long rectangular soundbar, designed really to be used with larger screen sizes. It's a slightly different shape. It's a bit more angled at the back. Otherwise, from the front, at least, it looks almost identical. So it's got metal grills, top and front, small display on the far right-hand side. And then there's some connections at the back. And it's got HDMI in and HDMI out. This year, they've introduced a new feature. So last year, one of their big features was anti-distortion cancelling software that you tried, I think, didn't you, as well, Phil? And I've got to say, I thought worked really well.
Yeah, it was really good.
Excellent sound quality from those speakers that had that feature. This speaker does not have, this soundbar does not have that feature, nor does it have multi-room. So they've dropped a few features here. They've dropped multi-room, although I don't think that ever really caught on. As far as Samsung products go, they've dropped the the distortion cancelling feature. And unlike the MS750 that came before it, rather than having upward-firing drivers, this has got what they call their panoramic sound acoustic beaming technology. And essentially, they have a driver which fires into a long pipe with a series of holes in it, a bit like an organ pipe. And then that directs the sound in different directions from the top of the soundbar and creates a more immersive effect, which I've got to say does work really well. For a single point source, it does create a much more expansive, larger, more open front soundstage and a greater sense of immersion. Now, I should stress this is not Dolby Atmos or DTS:X. It doesn't support either of those formats. In fact, it's limited to DTS, normal DTS and Dolby Digital, so it's not lossless. But as I say, for the market that it's aimed at, which is basically movie fans and gamers, that aspect works really well in terms of creating a more immersive experience when you're watching films or playing games. If you are a gamer, it's got quite a cool little feature because the new Samsung TV can detect if you connect a games console, they'll automatically go into game mode, and then the soundbar also goes into its game mode. So it's got three different modes: standard, which is just straightforward using the three forward-firing drivers, and that's it. There's the surround mode, which uses the acoustic beaming to create the more immersive effect. Or there's the game mode, which does something similar, but it's just slightly tweaked for gaming experience. So that's quite a nice little feature. It's got a well-designed remote control. It has got one big flaw, and I really don't understand why they've done this, which is that it's got HDMI 2.0 input and output, passes 4K, does not support HDR, which, given that you're targeting film fans and gamers, and you know, if you're a film fan or a gamer, chances are you're probably going to be doing things in HDR. The fact it doesn't support HDR just makes no sense to me, particularly given that it's an HDMI 2.0 connection anyway. So that bit is bizarre. Now, is it a big deal? Probably not, because with only one HDMI input anyway, you're much better off connecting everything to your TV and then connecting the output of the soundbar to the input of the TV and using ARC for the audio. That way you've got more connections connected anyway, more sources connected, and since it's not lossless, you don't lose anything going back via ARC. But it is a strange thing to do, given that you're targeting it at gamers and movie fans. Having said that, as I say, there is an easy workaround, and I've got to say, performance-wise, it was great, and it really did work well. And then it also sounded really good music too. I've got to say, it doesn't have the what they call their wide dispersion tweeters they were using on the last year's generation of soundbars, which kind of worked at created a wider sweet spot. This is more of a traditional driver and tweeter arrangement, but sounded very good with music, and like I say, sounded great with games and movies in terms of an immersive, bigger surround experience. But strangely, and for reasons best known to themselves, doesn't support HDR. It does include a wireless subwoofer there, which they didn't have with their previous generations of soundbars. They've been doing single units before. This one does come with a wireless sub, which I've got to say worked very well, delivered plenty of bass, nicely integrated with the soundbar itself. So pros and cons there. The thing that surprised me is that it's £699, which for a soundbar that doesn't support HDR seems a bit toppy. And basically you can get last year's MS750 for the same price. Doesn't come with a separate subwoofer, but that does include upward firing drivers, lossless support, HDR support, and multi-room support. So also the distortion cancelling technology as well. So, you know, you've got to think that's a strange decision, and I think a bit pricey.
Yeah, it does seem like a bit of a strange omission, that one. But overall, what did you think, Steve?
Overall, like I say, if you just do what I just suggest, which is to use the ARC to get the, which makes sense anyway, given the limited number of HDMI connections. And performance-wise, I did actually really enjoy it. As a soundbar, for what it's designed to do, I thought it worked really well. The acoustic beam technology, which is not new. I mean, Yamaha have been doing it for some time now, but it worked very well. It does create a larger, more immersive soundstage, which gets you into the movie or the game. And sound quality-wise, yes, it was good. And it also sounded great with music too. So, and the sub worked really well. So, overall, I liked it. I just thought that was a strange decision on their part not to support HDR, although not a deal killer, because, like I say, there are easy solutions to that.
Okay, good stuff. We're going to hear from Mark Hodge. So let me introduce Mark for those listening.
Hello. I've been here for 7 years. But
Mark, you are MediaBox guy, so what have you been looking at?
It's the Egrete, I'm not sure how you say it, A11, which follows hottish on the heels of the A10. And talking about price, this is super toppy. It's an Android media player, and it comes in at $389.99, which is obviously the best part, £400. And that's a heck of a lot in this market when you can pick up something not dissimilar for considerably less.
I should have taken it to Munich, and that would have been the cheapest thing there.
Yeah, it would. Yeah. I'm not sure.
It's all about finding your target audience, mate.
Well, it has got a bit of a hi-fi look and feel about it. It's a really well built unit, so at least you know your money's going somewhere. It weighs a ton. It feels like a brick. So the build quality is good. It loses the external antenna of the A10, so it's a bit of a neater looking thing, and it's got dual HDMI output, which is the first Android media player that we've done with dual HDMI. So that's useful if some of your equipment doesn't support 4K HDR or 3D, so you can channel your audio separately. It runs off the same processor as a high media, what's it called, the Q10 Pro, which costs about £120. So you can see that the price differential there. So it's got, you know, pretty much the similar capabilities to that. It's 4K HDR compatible, plays you 3D, HD audio formats, Atmos, DTSX, and it does it all pretty well. I mean, there were some problems with 4K HDR in that the playback was like about a third down the screen where it should be. So it was misaligned vertically, which is a bit off-putting. This is on Scope Movies 240.1, et cetera. So it's not without its flaws. It's got its own media player built in, so rather than using Kodi, which is what we tend to end up doing on the players, you don't really do that. You can run Kodi, but it doesn't run it particularly well. So it's got its own built-in high media player, and that deals with stuff really, you know, it deals with virtually everything really well. It does automatic frame switching. The video processing is quite good if you want to play around with some of the processing options. There's a few calibration controls in there. And generally, it was solid. It also integrates with Control 4, and it's got an RS-232 control system as well that you can download for automation. And it's solid. It's really, really solid, but you can't get over that price at the end of the day. It's just too much. It's just way, way overpriced. It's got a built-in hard drive bay, but that's not particularly unusual. You can get something similar for about £160. And there are other players on the market that offer the same kind of performance. And I'm particularly looking at the Zapiti here and the Zadoo X9 that offer you similar, if not better, playback and the better scraping of metadata for your movies and your TV shows. So overall, it's a good player, but I wouldn't spend £400 on it.
Okay, good stuff. Egrete, are they a Yorkshire brand, are they?
Egrete, yeah. Obviously, they're from China.
Right, okay.
As they nearly all are.
Okay, so that's the A11 Media Streamer. What we're saying there, Mark, is it's good, but not worth the money.
Nah, it's not worth all that money. It really isn't.
Okay, right. We'll be back in a sec with movie news and reviews. And we actually have reviews this week.
Wow.
Sound interested, Ed.
Well, I'll probably go to the cinema again at some point in the not too distant future. But
you'll go again at some point. Don't know what to see, but I'll go and see.
At the moment, there's a degree of uncertainty to what I have to do on a given evening. But if I, on a Tuesday or something when, actually, no, it's more on a Monday night when after I've put Will to bed, I could always entertain myself by staggering off down my local Cineworld and seeing what they're doing.
Woo!
Oh, living the dream. But I mean, I'm afraid the alternative is going to the pub, and I generally prefer going to the pub.
Okay, so. I'm assuming that you haven't seen Deadpool. Deadpool 2. Yeah. You haven't seen the first one?
I own it.
I've seen that.
Still never watched it. And also, I haven't bought a Blu-ray player with me, so I'm not going to get around to it now. I have to be honest, in terms of things that were a priority, my turntable, phono stage, about half of my record collection, that's here, and that was important to me. All the AV stuff, it's just stayed in the other house. So,
okay.
Not a problem.
I did go to the cinema. I was supposed to go on the Thursday night, and I changed it to the Tuesday, which was the release day for Deadpool 2, and I changed it to IMAX. And Steve, you saw it on Tuesday as well, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Do you want to go first? Because I normally go first on these things, but you go first on this one, I think.
Okay. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, obviously, there's always the danger going into the second movie that you know what to expect, because I think Deadpool itself was, the first film was a really, really fresh movie, really a bit of a surprise, you know, that whole irreverent attitude, the R-rated nature of it, the breaking the fourth wall, it was all... You know, it was clearly set in the X-Men universe, but it was very different from any other X-Men films. It was a huge hit, the most successful X-Men movie to date. I thought Ryan Reynolds absolutely nailed it as the lead character. Obviously got to redeem himself after having already had one go at Deadpool in X-Men Origins Wolverine. It was a nice, tight little movie. It was very funny. It was very well made. It had some good action sequences. And I loved it. So going into the sequel, you're always thinking, well, I kind of know what to expect now. So is it going to disappoint? And thankfully, it didn't. More of the same, to be honest. Lots of laughs. Very, very funny. Loads of irreverent jokes. Loads of breaking the fourth wall. You probably need to watch it two or three times to get all the jokes in there, because they're just flying at you left, right, and centre. It looked great. I thought the new characters were fun. The villain was great, good. I thought they delivered a good villain. He was a threat, but he also had a decent and interesting backstory and motivation. Interestingly, the villain is played by Josh Brolin, who also plays Thanos in Avengers Infinity War, and that point is commented on in Deadpool 2. There's some big action set pieces. The director of it is one of the guys that co-directed John Wick, so he can do action in his sleep, and there's some really good action sequences in it. It manages not to be, you know, I think a lot of sequels fall into that trap of just doing, you know, being bigger. Bigger and more is better, and it manages to avoid that by not being, you know, too over the top or too big. I mean, it's certainly a larger scale than the first Deadpool movie, but not a massively different in terms of scale, I don't think. So there's some nice set pieces in it, though. And yeah, overall, there's some fun cameos, I have to say, as well. And I thought I enjoyed it. My only problem with it was that, unfortunately, in the cinema I was in, the person to my right was laughing hysterically at everything, even things that weren't that funny. And was driving at the wall, and the person to my left smelt like a wino had pissed themselves. So I just wanted to get out of the cinema because it was just horrible. I just had the whole time thinking, like, I cannot wait to watch this on my own at home. Yeah. Cinema.
Actually, I really enjoyed the audience participation in this one, because obviously it was the first showing on the Tuesday night. It was 6 p.m. showing, so it was the first one in the IMAX. It was absolutely jam-packed out. I didn't have anybody smelly sitting next to me. And yeah, it was a real... I think it helped the film a lot more as well, yeah. Having the audience reaction there. I think because it was the same with Infinity War, you know, when I saw that packed out cinema, there was a really nice experience, a nice vibe in the screen, whereas I saw it a second time and there was only 10 of us in the screen. And of course, you don't get the laughs and you don't get, you know, because people tend to just sit there. So it was a different experience from that point of view. So in terms of audience participation, see it with a crowd, because it is definitely. it is best
seen
that way.
There were a couple of times
that
my audience actually clapped and cheered.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was really, really good from that aspect. And it is laugh a minute. I have not laughed that much at the cinema in a long, long time. It was almost therapeutic that way. It was, and you're saying it's not bigger and more bold than...
I didn't say it is bigger, but not
yeah, yeah, but it,
I haven't
think,
gone mad on that sense.
No, but I think it's a lot more knowing this time around, and it plays with the joke a lot more this time around, because it can get away with that, because it set the ground rules in the first one. they're really having fun with this one. I mean, really having fun with this. Some of the, you know, breaking the fourth wall stuff's really, really funny. And the post-title sequence, which I'm not going to spoil, but my God, that was the funniest thing in the whole film. Was the
there's a bit sort of midway through the credits, which is as the credits start rolling, there's some really, really, really funny stuff.
Yeah, don't sit to the end.
To the very end.
Don't sit to the end, because we did, and it was nightmare. Yeah.
So annoyed.
But didn't he do that in the first one as well?
No, the first one he turns up dressed as Ferris Bueller.
That's right.
The same
yeah.
thing. Go home. It's over. Yeah, it's finished.
Yeah.
And then he mentions that Cable might be the villain in the next movie. So I was expecting something at the end, but they didn't. It's. It is very knowing, and it digs fun at sequels.
And
itself. It takes its piss out of itself a lot, which is also good. It's got a tongue in its cheek.
And without spoiling it, in terms of Infinity War, Avengers Infinity War, this film ribs up that completely. And the whole end sequence, I'll leave it at that. For me, Deadpool 2, it's probably the best cinema experience I've had for a while. I've got to say, for somebody that hates comic book stuff and all the rest of it, and I don't hate it, but I'm not a massive fan. I'm really getting into it now. It's taken me a while. It's taken me, 10 years? But you know, it's one of those films that you don't have to know anything about the universe or anything. As long as you've seen the first film, you know what to expect. It's just it's bigger, bolder, funnier, and there's more Star Wars jokes in it as well.
Yeah, it's an excellent sequel. And I think they did a fantastic job. And like you say, if you've seen the first film and you enjoyed it, you will definitely enjoy this.
Yeah.
And hopefully it will beat The Passion of the Christ to be the most successful film in the R-rated film in the US ever.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed for that one. And I mentioned Star Wars. I've actually booked my ticket for opening day, but not the midnight viewing for Solo, which is this week. The reviews have been mixed again.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is interesting. So we'll see. I mean, I have to say, I am going into this one with my expectations on the floor after The Last Jedi and where this film has been going in its history and what's been reported and all the rest of it. However, in the trailers, it looks like it might be good fun. So I don't know. I don't know what to
expect. Yeah, the reviews have been mixed in the sense that they've mostly said it's okay, you know, it's middling. It's not like...
it's a Ron Howard film.
Yeah, he's a competent journeyman director who delivers an enjoyable product, and I think this is what you're going to get. I think the reviews haven't been as glowing as they were for The Last Jedi, but clearly that was a polarizing film because whilst the professional reviews were good, the viewers' experiences were very different. I think this is just going to probably be exactly what the reviewers are saying, which is just, you know, a mediocre romp. I think it's interesting that there's a Star Wars film out in 5 days' time, and you and I have barely mentioned it for the last few months.
Yeah,
and I think that that we're not particularly interested in this film. I don't think anyone wanted a Solo, Han Solo. I mean, God, Solo. Oh, could they have thought of a less imaginative name for this film?
Yeah,
we don't want a Han Solo movie. We don't want a Han Solo movie without Harrison Ford. Do we care about the backstory to Han Solo? I mean, the whole point is he turns up in Star Wars. He's cool. He's, you know, he's a mystery, and that's part of the fun of it.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in it. Obviously, the film itself had a very troubled production.
The thing is, there's no... In the action sequences and all the rest of it, you know they're not going to get killed. That nothing's going to happen because they're there in the years ahead in the films we've already seen. So there's no sense of dread or build in tension or anything like that, because that's a problem with prequels.
I think a prequel's where you don't know it's a prequel.
Yeah.
Like, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is a prequel, but you don't know that going into the film, and it's only when you get to the end you think, oh, hang on a minute. And there's also one of the Final Destination movies turns out to be a prequel, but you don't realize that to the last scene. But otherwise, there's the inherent narrative flaw that if it's a prequel, then you know certain characters can't die because they're in the next film, wouldn't it? Yeah. And so that's always an issue. Plus, after The Last Jedi, you know, I'm just not interested in Star Wars anymore. So
I've come to peace with it. I've said this a few times now. You know, Disney don't want me as an original trilogy fan. They don't want me anymore. I'm too old now, and they're going to aim it at the demographic where they're going to make shedloads of money. I'm going to go along out of interest to see what it's like. And if I enjoy it, I enjoy it. If I don't enjoy it, well, it's just a film at the end of the day. I mean, Star Wars for me is the original trilogy. That's it for now. And anything else, it'll be mildly entertaining, hopefully. And it's in the films now. So
yeah. Having said all that, I am going to the midnight screening.
Jesus.
No, you're not interested in Star Wars anymore.
I also said to Kaz that I'd review it for him as a favour, just right. for old time's sake.
Okay. Well, we'll let you off on that one because you're doing it for, in inverted commas, work purposes. So, yeah, you're allowed that one. Right, if we're not going to the cinema to see Solo, what can we buy on Blu-ray and UHD Blu-ray?
Quite a lot out this week, actually, some of which is worth considering. We've got Coco, which is the most recent film from Pixar, which tells the story of a young boy who gets trapped in the land of the dead and has to make his way back to the land of the living, otherwise he's going to be trapped there forever. Very similar story, actually, to the Book of the Dead, a film that came out, an animated film that came out a few years ago by Guillermo del Toro. But this, apparently, I haven't seen it yet, but I understand it's actually a Pixar, sort of, you know, one of their better movies of late. You know, good emotional content, funny, imaginative, lovely animation, and I'm actually quite looking forward to it. I've actually had it on disc for ages now.
Is it Blu-ray only?
It's, now, yes, a good point. In this country, it's only on Blu-ray and 3D Blu-ray. No 4K release, strangely.
Because right. They've done the 3D. Yeah.
There is a 4K release. Now, that's not the first time that's happened as well. It's, I'm not quite sure what Disney's playing at here and why they're doing that. So there's no 3D release of it in the States, for example, but there's a 4K release, and the opposite is the case in this country. So weird one. Weird one there. And a worrying precedent that I don't like the look of. So obviously I bought it in the States, and it came out in the States about 2 months ago, or at least 6 weeks ago, on 4K disc, so I bought that. Yeah, but you're right, Phil, it's a weird one. Yeah. Also out this week, and on 4K disc as well as Blu-ray, is The Post, which is Steven Spielberg's film before Ready Player One, the story of the Pentagon Papers. So this involved the Washington Post. It was the biggest. It was the story that turned the Washington Post from a small provincial paper into something that was nationally known. And it essentially works as a prequel to All the President's Men. In fact, it literally ends where All the President's Men starts. It suffers a bit from being. Thing is, I watched it actually, and you know, it's one of Spielberg's kind of worthy films. A little bit, not boring exactly, because it's got a great casting with Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep. But ultimately, the thing is, the story of the Pentagon Papers was broken by the New York Times. It's just that the Washington Post got caught up by publishing some stuff, they got caught up in the following trial. I just felt like, you know, that story should have been told from the perspective of the reporters from the New York Times that actually broke the story. And the only reason the Washington Post aspect's interesting is because they then went on to do Watergate, and Woodward and Bernstein broke that story. So it feels like a precursor to the more interesting story, which is Watergate and bringing the president down. This is about the fact the Pentagon and the government knew from 1964 that the war in Vietnam was largely unwinnable, but it was kept from the American public. But it's still an enjoyable film, and like I say, it does have a very good cast. And Spielberg, I think, you know, struggles to make a bad movie. It's just some of his more recent efforts have been a bit worthy and not that interesting. Yeah, so also we've got Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which I've seen, and I've got to say, really enjoyed it. It's made by the director who also did things like Seven Psychopaths and In Bruges, and it's got some cracking performances, particularly from, well, two Oscar-winning performances, in fact, from Frances McDormand and also from Sam Rockwell. Sam Rockwell is particularly, he's very good at playing a very unpleasant character, and it's had a lot of criticism because, you know, essentially his character is very racist, and he kind of has a redemption towards the end, and it's been criticized for that. But I've got to say, I thought that, no, not like it was message was saying racism's good. It was just saying he's an abhorrent character. But you know, even someone abhorrent can maybe have some sort of redemption and realize the error of their ways. But it's the film's really about Frances McDormand's character, and it's a powerhouse performance from her. It's very well made, and I enjoyed it. It is actually very funny at times, but it's also quite dark at times as well. And if you've seen his previous films, you'll get an idea of what to expect in that sense, kind of black humour. But I recommend that. I think it's great. And that's available on 4K and also on Blu-ray. Also out on 4K and Blu-ray, we've got The Commuter, which is the latest action film from Liam Neeson, as he basically just pads out his pension plan for the rest of his life. I couldn't care less. I gave up on those around about time taken too, I think. Also, Insidious, The Last Key, which was a competition prize last week. That's available on Blu-ray, and that's the latest in the Insidious film of sort of a franchise of horror movies. It's a prequel, I think, as well. And then also out on Blu-ray, and these are, I think, the first time, certainly the first time one that's been available on Blu-ray, but maybe both. Existence, which is the first time it's been available on Blu-ray, and it's a David Cronenberg film, actually one of his better, more recent films. I say more recent, I think they made about 15 years ago, but I like Existence. It's kind of in a similar vein to Videodrome, and I've actually got that on order because I wanted to get that on Blu-ray. And also The Grifters, which is Stephen Frears' film with Annette Bening, and I think Annette Bening and... John Cusack, and it's about about con artists, and again a really good film and worth checking out if you haven't seen it.
And all of those apart from Coco, no Coco's there as well, so it's just a post that we don't have a review of this week. So if you've got the homepage, we've got a review of all of those discs for you as well. Kazi's been working round the clock yet again. I don't think he sleeps. It's all done. Exciting week as well for UHD Blu-ray releases, Steve, because I'm expecting most of these, apart from The Commuter, to drop through my door.
Yeah, I mean, yes, actually, it's a big week for 4K releases, because you've got The Post, Three Billboards, The Commuter, and then also this week, The Matrix, Jurassic Park. Now, annoyingly, the Jurassic Park trilogy and also separately Jurassic World.
Yeah.
Although in the States, all four films were in worse.
Although the trilogy pack, it's only £40, so it's not too bad.
No, but if you want all four films, the combined price actually is more than just buying the disc from the States. The, you know, the four disc.
Yeah,
set.
But you're going to get hit with customs buying from the States.
So Jurassic Park trilogy, Jurassic World separately, and also, as I mentioned, The Commuter and The Post and everything else. So. Big week. Now, I've got to say, The Matrix interests me immensely because it's a new 4K restoration of the original camera negative. Obviously, there are some CGI effects in there, but it was in the early days of CGI. I'm interested to see how that plays out. But the addition of wide color gamut in HDR should be interesting to see how that, you know, because it's got a very specific color scheme, green in The Matrix, blue in the real world. So that's going to be interesting. Also, Dolby Atmos soundtrack. And again, that was one of those films, wasn't it, when it first came out on DVD, that it was the go-to demo, you know, with the bullet time stuff and everything, so that'll be interesting.
I can see the comments now, Steve, on The Matrix is, boy, there's a lot of grain.
Well, shots in 35, so it's definitely going to be grainy.
It's going to be really grainy, people, so be prepared. If you don't like grain, don't buy it.
Now, the original Jurassic Park will also be very interesting. Yes. Again, you know, restoration, 4K, very early days of CG, 1993. New DTSX soundtrack. And again, that was one of the soundtracks you went to as a demo.
It's still one that I go back to now and again. I know it so well, the T-Rex scene. I know it so well that I've been using that for 20-odd years now for testing kit and so on.
So I'm quite interested in that. I tell you what I got last week from the States, Saving Private Ryan, which has got Dolby Vision, Dolby
Atmos.
June
4th for the UK release. Really.
That looks fantastic. I mean, it's still a deliberately desaturated image. It's deliberately grainy. It's shot to look like battlefield footage. So there's a lot of flashing in terms of exposing the negative. They've done deliberate things to make it look like that, but that's perfectly rendered on the disc. But the colours are still more... There's still more... more depth to the colours in this than there is to the Blu-ray, and obviously it's much more detailed because it's a full 4K restoration of the camera negative. And again, this is largely just photography without effects. And the Dolby Atmos soundtrack. I watched the Omaha Beach sequence the first 30 minutes. On the Arcam system. And my God, it sounds good.
Yeah.
So highly recommend that if you haven't got it already. When did you say it's out in June, isn't it?
June the 4th in the UK. Yeah.
Yeah. Get it.
I've already got it pre-ordered.
Excellent.
Me too.
Christ, it's not like you, Mark.
I know. I've got nothing to spend my money on, so I'm just like, fine, did you?
Do you want to buy me a house?
I should donate to Ed, actually, shouldn't we?
Yeah. All donations to the Buy Ed Something Other Than a Cupboard in a War Zone fund is gratefully received right now. So.
Good stuff.
Part of the problem is that where I am right now is the town of Olney, for people that may not know it, it's just up the road from Milton Keynes. It's absolutely lovely. Can I afford to live here? No. So that's a bit of a downer because I could quite happily take to this place. It's very, very pleasant indeed. But unfortunately, it doesn't work that.
You should move north, Ed. Your money goes a lot further up here.
It would, but I do... You know, it's the weirdest thing. I do want to continue to play something of a role in my son's life. So, you're absolutely wrong.
I know. But yes, your money goes a lot further. I mean, it's living in the areas that you want to live in. Unfortunately, you're kind of trapped, aren't you, with what you can't afford, unfortunately.
Yeah, something like it around here.
Yes.
So, Mark, looking for things to spend your money on, there are some other discs that are being announced that you might want to go for. The Incredibles is coming out on 4K disc in June to time with The Incredibles 2. And also, you've got in July Ready Player One and in August Infinity War.
Yes.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. Start saving.
It's just finding the time to watch all these, Steve. I've now got a 4K UHD pile that's grown faster than the old Blu-ray one did.
So. Oh, but it occurred to me as we were doing this, I thought, geez, I bought Coco about 2 months ago. I still haven't watched it.
Yeah, it's that, I should make up for that because I've got plenty of TVs coming through at the minute for review. So
maybe we could build Ed a house with all the disc covers.
It'd be quite durable and weatherproof, but drafty, I suspect.
I don't know about the UK, but I saw a photograph of the packaging from The Matrix because it comes in a slipcover, which has got Trinity and Morpheus and Neo on the front, sort of bullet time, bullets heading towards them.
Yeah.
But when you remove that, the inside cover of the actual disc itself appears to be the Matrix with those little letters, the green lettering coming down, and then the white rabbit on it, which looked a bit crap, I thought.
The Matrix one, I think, for the UK is a slipcase. Image.
Yeah, but what's underneath the slipcase? Because I never bother keeping the slipcases.
I don't know. I haven't seen underneath.
That's what I mean. If it's the same as the US disc, then it's a bit, I think, disappointing.
Yeah.
A bit of cover art there.
Yeah. Right, so when we did our roundup of the month, I banned everybody from talking about Westworld because it had only been the season opener at that point. I've got to say, I've only watched the season opener and episode 2 so far. I've got 3 and 4 to catch up on when I get a second to sit down and actually watch them. I watched episode 2 on the C8. My God, that looked even on Now TV.
Even Now TV.
That looked good. It did. So I'm looking forward to the 4K Blu-ray release because I will go and buy it because I bought it for season 1 and it looked and sounded amazing. So I will buy the disc. But like I said, I'm up to season 2. Enjoying it so far, but I've got a funny feeling that, as with most second seasons, this one's going to do a lot of groundwork for the first half of the season before some kind of payoff towards the end, I think. I think we're going to get some big reveals as well that we're not expecting.
I think so. I mean, it's one of those things where it's already annoyed my father to the point where he can't be bothered. Just the utterly elastic use of time.
Yes.
I think that's going to antagonize a lot.
A real Nolan thing, isn't it?
It's like it's Nolan and Lost. J.J. Abrams and Christopher Nolan, and Jonathan Nolan together. I'm getting a really horrible Lost feel for second season two, and I'm losing interest quickly.
I said that after the season opener.
And it continues like that. Trust me, I've lost interest. To be honest, I'm going to give it one more episode. But it's mostly about robots, and I don't care about robots. You know, there needs to be some human characters in there, and there aren't any. They killed most of them. So, and I'll tell you who it misses. It misses Hopkins. Really added a whole level of another layer of class in the first season, didn't he? And without Hopkins around to add that extra level of class, I think it's missing him. A bit. I don't know. I think they. I'll tell you what. Last night, because we recorded this on Friday, last night, Thursday night, Human started again on Channel 4, which kind of covers similar things. It's about androids and sentiency and what it is that makes you human. Vastly superior on a fraction of the budget. Much more interesting ideas and the way they actually handle them.
Are you losing interest now because there's not as much tits and bums, Steve?
There's very little sex in this, but none actually, I think. But no, I just find that the narrative structure, there was a very clear, it felt in the first season like they had a very solid narrative structure from the beginning, and there was some nice conceits in there, and the sort of playing with time made sense in the ultimate, and by the ultimate end, by the end of that.
Yeah, because there was a nice payoff at the end.
This season, I just feel like they go, okay, well, what do we do next? It feels like a lot of American shows where they just, they kind of just start losing their way. I mean, or in the case of Lost, they literally lost the plot. You just feel like now they're kind of, well, we got to expand it, we got to do this, we got to do that. And it's like,
The other thing is that when you're playing with the elastic use of time, where the bulk of the cast do not change in appearance, that
makes it very hard to work out.
Well, they are in some regards just having a laugh. And that can be irritating. I mean, as you say, it's still beautifully shot. Episode 3 I quite enjoyed. I didn't get around to watching episode 4 yet.
There are some interesting ideas being introduced, which I kind of like. But I'll tell you what I've struggled with is those, well, they're not really hosts, are they? But the kind of androids that just look like people without their skin. It's a crap effect. It does not very good makeup. I think it looks really rubbish. So that's I always find that whenever they're on screen, I think that doesn't look very good.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I mean, it's interesting. I don't know. It's me getting access to Sky at the moment is a bit hit and miss. So it's funny. I was watching one of the things I watch religiously, and I'd still make a point of watching. Totally different because it's not drama in any way, shape, or form. Is Taskmaster on Dave, and like Humans, but even more so. Taskmaster's done on a budget of about 11p, and it lives or dies purely on the likability of the people doing it and the ideas contained therein. And you just get the feeling that Westworld has unlimited money and just seems to have forgotten some of that.
Well, it has no likable characters for a start.
That's
which
a challenge.
Is very
yes.
much a struggle, I think. I think Dara Bren was saying, talking about this on Twitter, but he's absolutely right. There are no likable characters in it at all. And therefore, it's very difficult to emote or empathize with anyone in it. Because not only are most of them not even humans, but even the humans are really unpleasant. Whereas, as I say, Humans, the series, if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. I think it's really, really good, and it addresses some really interesting and very profound issues in an imaginative way. Particularly, they have to be imaginative to get around some certain budgetary limitations. But I think it's much better.
What channel's that on, Steve? And how
on
can
Channel
we catch
4.
Up?
Channel 4. Right. So it'll be on all 4 if you want to catch up. I think there's like 8 episodes a season, so there's not a lot. And it's just started last night, season 3. But it's a really, really good series.
And as I say, also, I started the plug, so I'll finish it. Then this current season of Taskmaster on Dave, that's about, 3 episodes in. You can watch them all. Because Dave, any programming that Dave generates itself, it keeps up forever. But it's a likable group of people, as it was last season with Bob Mortimer. I mean, I love Bob Mortimer. He's just as a wonderful human being. But this year, it's Lisa Tarbuck, who is a genuinely, genuinely clever human being, very funny. Tim Vine, who is tolerable in this. Russell Howard, who is tolerable in this. Alice Levine, who I knew nothing about. I don't know what she does, but she is quite funny. Which is quite good, and a chap called Mr. Chowdhury, who I believe was in the phone. I think he's in the Phone Jack and stuff. I can't remember, but it's all very funny, and it's just, as I say, it's incredibly British in concept, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it. And I'm also, it's no MasterChef, but I don't mind Britain's Best Home Cook as well. That's quite good.
Yeah, yeah. I noticed Ed that after you championed it, NBC cancelled Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
No, Fox cancelled it. And Fox cancelled it.
Fox cancelled it, and NBC have picked it up. Sorry, yeah.
Yes. Behind the scenes, it would appear that there were some ambitious wage rises requested.
Yeah.
And I think, and you know, Fox doesn't do that sort of thing. So I think people got a bit cheeky. It wasn't so much that the figures were slipping; it was just they were beginning to get a slightly inflated sense of their own self-worth. Yeah. And this has been a bit of a slapback. It's still very funny, and I still enjoy it very much.
I am determined to catch up with it, but I keep forgetting where it is, Ed, so just remind me where it is.
E4, it's also on Netflix.
Right, okay.
So new ones on E4, or existing ones on Netflix.
Excellent.
So yes, that's all good. And yeah, otherwise fine.
I have been quite interested in the Fat season that's been running on BBC One. I don't know if anybody else has been catching up with that one, but
Hugh Whitley Ferningstall.
Yes, it's actually been. I hate the whole thing where he goes lobbying and all the rest of it. But I gotta say, really interesting in terms of actually finding out products that try to pass themselves off as being healthy products and just how much sugar is actually in them. And
I have to say, pre-packaged stuff has just got unnecessary crap or just seemingly in its very DNA. By the same token, it's interesting you brought this up. Hugh Ferningstall has just about stayed on the side of not annoying me to the point where I start throwing things at my television.
Yes, I know what you mean.
Jamie Oliver's recent actions, he can die in a fire, frankly.
especially given what he's been up to with his companies.
Yeah, he is a hypocrite of the first order, and this is essentially saying poor people can't have nice things. That is largely the undertone of it. You know, if you can afford to come to one of my grotty restaurants, you can eat whatever shite you like. But no, if it's from somebody else, not a chance. Yeah, my point is that with some of these things, ultimately, TV chefs have no democratic mandate. If you feel that strongly about these things, could you stand for election on that ticket and see where it gets you?
Hmm.
That's sort of what, if you're leveraging mild TV fame to mess about with the decisions and freedoms that I have, you can, I don't really care who you are, you can sod off.
Anyway, as I was saying, Hugh Finley Whitstall, it's a great little documentary series. It's on iPlayer. I thoroughly recommend you go and watch it because it will open your eyes to certain things that, you know, where people maybe are making mistakes in their diet. And it's something that's close to my heart at the minute, making sure that you're eating the right things. And so, because we start getting to my age, you know.
Hopefully not too close to your heart, that fat blockage.
Thanks very much, Steve. I haven't hit 5-0 yet. I've only got 5-0 on the side of the car. I haven't hit 5-0 yet.
Is that your target? 50 pounds.
The thing is, if you want
50, that's the target.
It's interesting. Obviously, with Hugh Ferling, we're still doing this, trying to torturously drag this back. It's interesting. Obviously, this fat stuff. It's all very, very noble. Ironically, if you want the healthiest living possible. From as Hugh Fernie, the early River Cottage stuff, where he was fundamentally existing on a subsistence budget and growing and foraging stuff. That's the healthiest TV food you're ever likely to see. And there were some cracking ideas in that.
It's a restaurant chain.
River Cottage has become a restaurant, and it must be said, the vast majority of it is still pretty clean living stuff. You know, he's in the end, he sort of became more interested in this fat stuff because he, without becoming a fat bastard, started having elevated blood pressure and cholesterol because of use of butter and things like that. But he was actually still quite active within that. So he's much more interested in the constituent parts without simply going, oh, X has got a billion calories in it, yeah. So X is bad.
Well, I mean, the other thing at the minute is visceral fat as well, so you don't need to be fat to be unhealthy and to have a really unhealthy fat in your body as well, which is, you know, I never knew about that until about 4 or 5 years ago, and I started taking you know, realizing what was actually going on with food and what you're taking in. So I mean, you could be thin as a rake but actually be pretty chronically ill because of the fat around your internals and stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's opened my eyes, and it's really worth watching if you're interested in that kind of thing, or just, you know, want to scare yourself about what you're eating.
Yeah, so yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, and it's making me hungry now.
I need me some fat.
Yeah, and it's getting, well, not fat, but it's getting close to lunchtime, and I'm going to have my salad and my eggs and stuff. So it's a good job I don't live with somebody.
Well,
unless you live with a chef who cooks really healthy food, then you're fine.
I meant this really healthy eating with...
Oh, you mean it's a bit windy, is it?
It's a bit windy.
is there an actual explosion risk with
natural gas? And that, on that explosive bombshell, there we go. I knew I was leading into something there. And that's it for this week. My thanks to Steve Withers.
Make 10 men feel like 100.
Mark Hodgkinson.
Is your foot all right?
And Ed Selly.
This is Rogue One.
Cheers, Ed.
For those of you who hadn't already guessed.
Yeah. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook, bookmarkavforums.com for latest reviews, news and videos, and of course, why not leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes, but only if you enjoyed the show. I'm Phil Hinton, thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you again next week.